The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Power outages at Dublin Airport cause disruption, Boeing workers on strike, and the billionaire spacewalker returns to Earth. Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport and Safety Auditor, is with me now in studio. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So what happened in Terminal 2?
Well, something went bang and the supply of electricity was stopped there yesterday. And of course, it's a busy morning. I've been there on Sunday mornings and even now it's still summer season, believe it or not. And it's a very busy place. And what you don't want is what happened on Sunday morning, because the backup system they have didn't seem to work. And I find that kind of strange.
I mean, they have their own generators, don't
they? Absolutely. And they're checked once per week. Now, they're in place, of course, for the vital stuff that has affected the airport, such as your instrument landing system, your VOR navigation aids, your radios, your lights, all that kind of thing. They would affect generally, you know, the operations of the air side of the airport. And they have a kick-in system that takes place and it takes 90 seconds to work up so that the pilots will not be discommoded. Safety is not compromised. Okay. Inside the terminal, it's a little bit longer, but it still should cut in because you've lost all your methods of, you know, transferring passengers. You can't do check-ins.
So the planes can fly safely, but you have no passengers on board.
And what does that do for your system of parking and baggage handling and that kind of thing, and reconciliation? And of course, the security system collapses if the machines have no power. So that's what happened yesterday morning, and it took a long time apparently to fix it up.
And there are all sorts of ancillary problems then, machines not working, like the passport machines playing up.
Yes.
All of that. And I suppose when you reboot any computer when it's lost power, often it takes a while to get it right.
It does. And you're talking about a very busy time. You're talking about thousands of passengers on a daily basis like that. And it backs up then. And do you let the aircraft go out empty as happened before? Do you bring them in? How do you process people who have come in from foreign lands who have to be checked in the normal way across from America or the Middle East or so forth? So it's a big deal, even though, you know, no lives were lost and no injuries took place. And allegedly only 15 or 16 flights were delayed by some couple
but
of hours.
There has to be an inquiry as to why it happened, because
you
can't have a repeat of that kind of thing.
No, and it's a vital installation in every sense of that word in North County Dublin.
Hmm. Now, they got it up relatively quickly, so congratulations to their technicians for doing that. But still, it shouldn't happen at all. Second thing, I came in on Friday night, Zone 18, where they allow free now cabs to come
indeed.
In and pick
yes.
up people. Chaotic. Dangerous as well. I saw two, they looked like Chinese visitors pulling bags around.
Yes, indeed.
Making their way between the queuing cars.
Well,
not acceptable.
Funny you should mention that, because I've dropped off people at the top ramp, which you can do in T1 in any case like that. And I noticed a huge shortage of airport police people or people in yellow jackets who can guide people in and out. American airports do that. They let you park for 35 seconds or 40 seconds. I saw no policemen the last two occasions I've been there. And the place you mentioned is a location where people who are in the proper dress, who know what they're doing, can, you know, guide people, give advice and control things. A presence is often enough to sort this
out. Well, there was nobody there except one guy at the barrier itself.
Yeah, no.
And he was security, not...
I understand. Well, I would urge the DAA, who want us to work well, and, you know, we're promoting the use of public transport in all its modes to and from the airport. And for a very small, investment in staff, you can go a long way and ease that kind of thing. Because an accident is not something that can be...
20 minutes to get out of there, just to leave the place.
Yeah, no, there's a lack of control there. I would urge the people who do these things, because they can do it. They did a very good job with the organisation of taxis some years ago, because I know the manager concerned, and he had a simple plan and it worked and everybody knew what to do.
Now, Ryanair and Boeing,
yes.
are they going to have delays in the delivery of their aircraft?
Yes. There was a strike, as you heard. It surprised me and it surprised the union chiefs in Washington, the state, because the factory went on an all-out strike. 33,000 people who were working for Boeing, they're working to catch up the delivery of the 737 MAX, which we discussed earlier. They have a limit on that. They haven't reached that limit. And they've got all sorts of other aircraft which are backed up. They've got problems with their 7779, which has been grounded as a prototype. But nonetheless, they've got clearance to make these aircraft. And now with a full strike, God knows what effect it will have on the long-term delivery of all these aircraft.
What's the issue? Is it about money?
It is about money. They wanted to get... The union had thought they had struck a deal for, I think it was a 24% over 3 years or 26%, something like that, which they had sold to the union members, and 96% of the union had said, no, we're not doing that and we don't accept it and we don't have faith in the management, which is a slap in the face both for the organisation, Boeing, and for the union staff who thought they'd sold it in that regard. And it's an all-out indefinite strike. The only good news, I suppose, if you call it that, Boeing is in a critical stage in terms of investment, and its share value has gone down, as we've discussed many times, on this show. They owe $33 billion the last time I looked, and they can borrow against that. But if they can't produce the goods that, you know, brings in the cash flow, things will get bad. So somebody has mentioned out loud on an American television station, perhaps they get back to the table and up the offer maybe to 30% or something like that. So it's a gun to Boeing's head in every sense of the word.
Now, one of the things we hear about every year, particularly in the busy summer season, is about unruly passengers. And, you know, that's very comforting when you're on, when you're in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever happens maybe at boarding, the crew have some chance of calling security and get someone off.
Indeed.
But if you're in the air when it happens,
it's not nice to see like that. Now, I have examined the documentation. Every commercial aircraft should have an incident kind of book to log these things. And more of them are being filled based on the returns we've seen with the various regulators. And in fairness, you've seen a number of aircraft halfway across the Atlantic turning back to land at Shannon, where unruly passengers are, you know, they're discommoded and they're put into handcuffs, believe it or not. They have the plastic ties they have on aircraft. I've seen them. And they fill in the incident form because it may become evidence in a court case later. And down in Limerick and Ennis courts, they have put people away for, you know, 30 days or whatever like that. Usually it's a combination of taking too much alcohol before getting on board. And then in business class, they give you unlimited amounts, as I found out and fell asleep, you know, after two glasses of champagne. But you can buy your drink. And there is a discussion now. I've heard Michael O'Leary stating perhaps there should be a limit of two alcoholic drinks at the airport and then two on board. Because I don't know how you'd enforce that, to be honest, Pat, because, you know...
Yeah, and depends on the length of the flight as well.
And depends on the time.
Ryanair is short haul anyway.
Indeed, so. The other point is that there's a physiological effort on this. Most of the aircraft go, you're climbing to 8,000 feet, so you're going up a mountain, believe it or not, by the time you're at cruising altitude. Some of the new airlines only go to 6,000 feet, but it still affects your absorption. So you absorb the alcohol much more quickly than you do in the air. And if you have no food on board, you actually get drunker faster. So your inhibitions then may be affected. It's hard to know what happens.
I had a very interesting experience with Ryanair, who are normally very good, very much on time, but our flight was delayed, flight coming in from Dublin, and then they took the aircraft and gave it to Cork. People who were delayed 3 hours got our aircraft and we had to wait for another one to come in. Didn't delay us by very much, but we were actually loaded on the buses to get out to the aircraft and then told to get off again and go back through boarding, which I found ridiculous, to be quite honest. You know, it showed a lack of organisation. And meanwhile, the people in Cork, they were trying to rush them on the plane, I presume, to avoid compo. But it was more than 3 hours by the time they got them out.
Indeed.
So
indeed.
They did not avoid the €250 compo.
It's all to do with, in fairness to the airline, about 96%, 98% in fact, of their operations go ahead, because I've been in the headquarters and they show you that the 2% that goes wrong, they sort quite quickly. So someone decided, probably in Dublin, let's transfer the aircraft from point A to point B. They have to refile the flight plan and then tell the crew, are you still in hours? That's one of the important things. You can't have the crew out of hours or you'll be left where you are.
I think it was the crew that came out on the Dublin aircraft were switched to the new aircraft, wherever that
and
came from.
Some of the flights to and from Ireland, people don't realise that, don't originate, you know, from the UK. They fly from certain bases in Poland. They've seen them from Malta and they fly then Dublin, say Birmingham or back, whatever it might be. There's a lot of flexibility. Yeah. It is to do to maximise the flight time of the aircraft and the crew. And it's quite well done by algorithms and that kind of thing.
The captain in his announcement said, you know, unforeseen circumstances, we were told we had to switch aircraft.
Yeah, it's unusual like that, you know. Having said that, I've waved to an aircraft in, I think it was Serbia. They taxied out, ran up the runway and stopped and came back. And the captain said, bad news, a red light came on. But by a pure coincidence, we have spare aircraft here for fuel. So they literally walked off one aircraft onto the other and they were gone within 45 minutes. So there's flexibility required in aviation in these places too.
Now, speaking of extravagant flying, I mean, there's a billionaire who got to walk in space.
Yeah, and I was really surprised by that. He doesn't tell us that he's paid $55 million for this seat. And I think he paid for a fellow passenger as well. So a lot of money to go up to space for 5 days. He did splash down safely, I think, was it yesterday morning
after the five days?
Yeah,
I watched it and it was very interesting. The infrafred photography allowed
to see
dark, literally.
No, it's a strange thing to do because the people who were tested to go into NASA, for example, in their system like that, they're mostly experienced either aviators as pilots or test pilots, or they're put into the back of a T-38, you know, supersonic trainer, and they're strapped in with a computer, and the aircraft rolls 38 times left and right to see will you be airsick or can you fill into it and that kind of thing. And some people survive and some people don't. Those who do go on to become astronauts, but I'm not sure what training these people did, because unknown to yourself, your circular canals in free fall or weightlessness can be affected, no matter how experienced you are. One or two astronauts have been severely space sick for their time, even though they were highly qualified pilots. These people appear to be very happy with the G-forces and the lack of gravity and that kind of thing. They depressurized, which is a very scary thing to do, in a test suit that hasn't been flown in space before. Yeah. And they open the hatch and they look out. That can cause vertigo because you're 700 kilometres above the space, in space above Earth, looking at a fantastic scene that few
people. We're used to the Michelin Man type suit from
Absolutely.
NASA.
Absolutely.
And these are Slim Jims.
And they look like somebody's going fishing in a thing you'd buy in a German supermarket like that. And the other point about it is that they seem to work very well. And if you want to join the company, that's, you know, SpaceX are looking for sewers, people who sew this thing. They're actually sewn by hand and then glued together.
My goodness.
Their pressurization is extraordinary. I don't know how they do it.
Last question. We have clarity on the limits on passenger numbers going into the winter and into next summer.
We do. It's not good news, I don't think, because I've said this before. We have on one hand, fantastic system called Bord Fáilte, you're dealing with our friends in the wee north, you know, and they're trying to sell the place to America and to Britain and to France and other countries as a tourist destination, particularly in the off season. And yet we're saying, no, you can't have that. You're going to be restricted in terms of numbers. So the airlines are kicking up and saying, hang on, this goes back to 2007, where you said the roads weren't good enough and there isn't enough public transport now. So the county council is kicking to touch and saying, look, Dublin Airport, DAA, have to send us certain figures by November. This is only September. And we make a decision now, maybe by Christmas, as to what you can or cannot do. So it doesn't make sense for the winter of 2024 and 5 or the summer of 25.
Indeed, because aircraft are being scheduled.
Exactly, they are now. And the price goes up if the demand is increased above the supply. So
the
I cannot understand it.
To Fingal is get the finger out.
And sort this problem out. And the Minister for Transport is the greatest shareholder of the DAA. So explain that to me, Pat. I don't know what's going on.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. That's Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport and Security.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.